It's half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike invites you to a nationwide quiz and conversation party. Here's how it goes. You furnish the questions and our experts try to answer them. For every question used, Lucky Strike will reward you with $10 in defense stamps. If the question is muffed, you get a total of a $50 defense bond plus the 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, Information Phase, as always, is completely unprepared and unrehearsed. Our panel of experts includes our three regulars, Franklin P. Adams, Oscar Levant, and John Kieran, and as our guest of honor, the famous author, Emil Ludwig, whose recent book, Bolivar, has been highly praised. Now, we're going to begin with a question from R. Kessler Searles of Mount Vernon, New York. Get 3 out of 4 on this if you can. It's about certain circumstances under which certain things were opened to release or admit other things. For example, what was opened to release all the ills of the world? All that Mr. Ludwig.
The Pandora.
Yes, not Pandora.
The box.
Yes, Pandora. The box of Pandora. What caused Pandora to open the box, Mr. Ludwig? Why did she do it?
She wants to tell the story.
Don't want to tell it?
Curiosity.
Just plain curiosity, yes, and gave us all the ills of the world.
If she hadn't done it, somebody else would have.
Now, what was opened to release the dangerous winds of the world? The winds of the world, Mr. Kieran?
Or the Cave of Aeolus. It was King of the Winds. He opened the cave.
Well, you got the right man, I think. But what actually was opened that from which the winds were released? Was it the cave or was it the bag in which the winds were confined?
Well, it's a cave in Virgil's Aeneid.
I thought it was a bag in which these four winds were confined.
Been a bag lately, then.
I don't know. At any rate, it was the crew of Ulysses who untied these winds and that... Aeolus had bidden them not untie. Now, how about something that was open to admit the beasts of the world, or to release all the beasts of the world? Mr. Kieran.
The Ark, Noah's Ark.
Yes, Noah's Ark, quite right. And what was open to admit a concealed foe, an enemy, a disguised enemy? Mr. Adams.
A wooden horse.
Yes, and under what circumstances?
Siege of Troy.
Under the Siege of Troy, the famous Trojan horse.
Also, a jackpot is frequently opened under such conditions.
Mr. Levant, do you have another answer for that one?
In a succinct way, I was going to say the Trojan horse.
The Trojan horse, very good. Well, that was rather easy. Now, let's see if we can get a little more difficult question. Here's one from Dr. C.D. Larson of Bethesda, Maryland. Get 3 out of 4 again. Who was the first president of each of these countries? The first president of Czechoslovakia. Mr. Ludwig.
Masaryk.
Masaryk,
yes. The
best
man we had.
Pardon?
The best man we had in Europe.
And we're going to have others just as good in the future. Now, that date of Masaryk's assumption of the presidency was what? When did he come?
18.
In 18, yes. The first president of Colombia. The first president of Colombia.
Nicholas Murray Butler. He's the present president.
He's not merely the present president, but probably permanent president.
He always was.
That isn't the Colombia I meant.
It's hard to get in.
I meant Colombia, yes, Mr. Adams, thank you. The South American country of Colombia had as its first president whom? Colombia's first president?
Colombia.
No.
Simon Bolivar.
Simon Bolivar is right, yes.
Bolivar.
Do you have to say Bolivar?
Bolivar or not.
Yeah. I don't think we're ever going to get used to saying Bolivar up here, Mr. Ludwig and Mr. Kieran. Bolivar, we say. In 1819, yes, was the first president of Colombia. Mr. Ludwig was too modest to answer that question. I knew he knew the answer. The first president of Turkey.
first president of Turkey. Mr. Sherry.
Mustafa Kemal.
How do you suppose we pronounce that, Mr.
Kemal.
Kemal. Yeah. Can't you make Mr. Sherry?
Kemal, they're coming.
Yes. Mustafa Kemal. He was given another name. Remember the name he was given later on?
Yeah.
Atatürk.
Atatürk. Right. What does it mean, Mr. Ludwig?
The strong...
Yes, I think head Turk.
Yeah.
Number one Turk, as it were. Now, the first president of the Philippine Islands, gentlemen, was who? Mr. Kern.
Well, I think it's Manuel Quezon.
Yes, elected in 1935. Well, that gives us four presidents out of four. Now, how about this one from Mrs. H.F. Jurgen of Upper Montclair, New Jersey? This is a musical question. You're going to hear three musical selections. I want you to identify for us the composer of them and the person who was honored in each of them, in whose honor this selection was composed. Let's have the first. I have two hands. Mr. Ludwig?
Mm-hmm.
Who was the composer of it?
That's the mark of the Eroica.
Yes, well, you say that as if it were obvious to everybody, but it isn't obvious to me.
That's the story of Napoleon.
Yes, it was in honor of Napoleon. Mr. Levant had his hand up and was no doubt going to say the same thing. Mr. Levant, is it true that the Eroica was composed to honor Napoleon? Is there some question about that?
Well, he originally had the name on the manuscript and he scratched it out after Napoleon betrayed ideologically what Beethoven thought he was. But... I don't see that it answers anything.
You mean Mr. Ludwig?
It was not actually dedicated to Napoleon.
No, but it began, when he first composed it, he did intend to honor Napoleon with it. At least that's the story. Mr. Ludwig?
It was in a certain sense dedicated because he wrote in Italian, Buonaparte, Luigi da Beethoven.
That's enough for me. That's settled as far as I'm concerned. All right, listen to the next musical selection and identify for us the composer and the person who was honored in it. Mr. Levant had his hand up.
That's by Ravel.
Right. What's the selection called?
Minuet.
Yes, and the selection
from the Tombeau de Couperin?
From the Tombeau de Couperin, yes.
Actually, it was dedicated to one of the soldiers. There are seven, I think, pieces, I'm not sure, in the suite. And each piece is dedicated to a fallen French soldier, a contemporary of the last war of Ravel's. The entire suite is not dedicated to Couperin, it's in the style of Couperin.
Oh, is it not intended to honor Couperin then?
No, I think it's the French tribute to the essence of French music, which Couperin and others represented of an early period. But the pieces individually were dedicated to soldiers.
That's a perfect answer. Thank you. Now, how about the third and last of these musical selections? I get a blank look from... how about Mr. Kieran on this?
Franklin D. Roosevelt Jones.
Yes, there isn't much question who's being honored there. Right. Now, the next question comes from Francis McGuire of Brooklyn, New York. And it's about famous knights. This is K-N-I-G-H-T-S, knights. Who were these knights? The first is the Knight of the Rueful Countenance. The Knight of the Rueful Countenance. Who was that?
Mr. Ludwig doesn't know what rueful means.
Well, rueful, Mr. Ludwig, I'll tell you what rueful means. It means sorrowful or melancholy.
Tristan?
No. He was a sad knight, that's true. But that's not the one I mean. It's Don Quixote, Quicksilver. Sometimes it's translated as Knight of the Woeful Figure, but rueful countenance is the description generally given to him. Now, here's another. The Knight of the Swan. The Knight of the Swan. Mr. Levant.
Lohengrin.
Lohengrin, yes. And a very parfait, gentle knight. Who was that?
Parfait?
Parfait is right.
Ice cream?
Not in this case. Mr. Adams?
Probably either Galahad or Lancelot.
Or Parsifal.
No. This is a specific knight, and I've quoted the exact
knight,
word.
The knight in Chaucer.
We should have said that first, Mr. Adams, because that's quite right. I'll have to count it wrong, because you gave us the wrong answer first. Yes, it's Chaucer's knight, as described in the prologue to the Canterbury Tales, a very parfait, gentle knight. And the word gentle, G-E-N-T-I-L, what does that mean, used in Chaucer's language?
Kind.
I think something more specific than that. I think it means of High-born.
Gentle blood.
Yes, of gentle blood, meaning of good lineage. That gets us two wrong and sends a $50 defense bond to Miss McGuire and a set of the Britannica. How about this one from Mary Kersey of the city? Now, we all listened on Washington's birthday to President Roosevelt's speech. In this speech, the president mentioned four main lines of communications, and he also mentioned four freedoms. And I think he wanted us to understand by that the four freedoms can only be achieved by keeping the four lines of communication open. Now, what are the four main lines of communications? Mr. Levant.
First, I'll do the Southwest line, which is from lower Southern California to Australia. That's one line.
That would be the South
Southwest line. South Pacific.
Yes, quite right.
You want some more?
I'd like three more, Mr. Kieran. Take it up.
From here, northeast to England, another would be...
Yes, let's call that the North Atlantic.
North Atlantic, then there is the two ways in the South Atlantic, one around the Straits of Magellan and the other around the Cape of Good Hope.
Well, one would be the South Atlantic and the other would be the... What's the what ocean?
Well, you would go around into the Indian
Ocean. Into the Indian Ocean, yes. That would be the fourth line of communication. The North Atlantic lane, the South Atlantic lane, the Indian Ocean, and the South Pacific. Now, the four freedoms for which the United Nations are fighting, we should know those by heart. The four freedoms. Mr. Adams.
Press.
I think not press.
Religion.
Religion is one.
Speech is another.
Speech is another.
The choice of religion, I think.
Pardon?
Religion, but it's phrased so that you can choose your religion.
Yes, complete freedom of religion, and freedom of speech gives us two of the four freedoms, and the other two, which are not included in our Bill of Rights, but which
freedom
are perhaps implicit.
Freedom from
what?
Fear.
Fear.
From fear and freedom from, gentlemen, we should get
want,
there.
Want
is right, yes. Freedom from want and freedom from fear. Now, the next question comes from Sally Weissman of Webster, Massachusetts. Get three out of four on this. Suppose, gentlemen, that you were serving a full dinner and you wanted your guests to drink all of the following wines that I'll mention. With which course would you serve each wine? Now, the first wine is claret. With what course would you serve claret, Mr. Ludwig?
With the meat or the roasting.
Yes, that's quite right. With the roast.
With spaghetti, too.
With spaghetti, if spaghetti is a course. Sure. And how about dry sherry? What would you serve dry sherry with, Mr. Levant?
If you want to make a guest sleepy, you always give him dry sherry. I'll do it before dinner.
Yes, you could serve sherry before dinner, but if you were serving it with the dinner, what course would, Mr. Adams?
Probably with the soup.
With the soup, yes, quite right. Now, how about...
You can have it in the soup, too.
You can have it in the soup if it's turtle soup. How about Chablis? Chablis, Mr. Curran.
I'd serve that with the fish... Slightly chilled. Not the fish.
What is Chablis?
The white wine.
It's a white wine. Comes from, or did come from, what country?
Well, I think the Chablis comes from Burgundy.
Yes, it's in the Burgundy
white
region
Burgundy.
Of France. That's quite right. A very dry...
Some are not dry enough.
Some are not dry enough? Then they're not Chablis. They're just Chablis under that
Chablis
under similar label. Mm-hmm. How about... now we come to port. Port. What would you serve port with, Mr. Ludwig?
I would serve it to the sweets on the end.
Yes, I think most of us would. With the dessert at the end, Mr. Ludwig.
Or the cheese.
Or sometimes the cheese. I think probably you'd serve
in
the
England
Burgundy.
Cheese.
It's an every English story, too. And they always get gout.
Generally. Oh, you could serve the port with the nuts and fruit sometimes at the end
you
of the dinner.
Throw it away,
sir. Generally. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out one $50 defense bond and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, Mr. Cross points out that the things you know about tobacco are much too useful to file and forget.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know as well as anyone that in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. But in actually choosing a cigarette, do you stop to think of tobacco? If not, you may be missing out on a lot of real smoking enjoyment. For mildness and better taste depend on fine tobacco. That's why Lucky Strike consistently pays the price to get the finer leaf at market, year after year. For example, at auctions in Williamson, North Carolina, season of 1939, the American Tobacco Company paid 29% more for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 29% above the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. And that crop, properly aged, mellowed, and blended with other fine crops, is in the Luckies you buy today. Mr. Fadiman, aren't facts like these worth every smoker's attention?
Mr. Croft, the facts speak for themselves, and I timed you with just 58 seconds. Now, how about a question from Mrs. R.T. Parsons of New Madison, Ohio? I'm going to give you the names of two people who played an important part in the lives of celebrities of the past or present, famous people. I want you to name that celebrated person. Now, I'm going to name two Catherines first. The first one is named Catherine, and the second is named Catherine, too. Mr. Adams?
Henry VIII.
Henry VIII, yes. What Catherines were they?
One was Catherine Parr.
Good enough.
And Aragon. Catherine of Aragon.
Catherine of Aragon. And wasn't there a Catherine Howard, too?
Catherine Howard.
So he ran to Catherine's.
That was
more
Catherine with the K, though.
Catherine with the K. Oh, makes
sense. Ran away from the world.
Now I'm going to name two other people, women, Frederica Brion and Charlotte von Stein. Ludwig.
Goethe,
yes. And perhaps those are not the only ladies' names that one could mention in connection with Goethe. Francis II and Darnley. Francis II and Darnley, Mr. Levant.
Mary, Queen of Scots.
Yes, Mary, Queen of Scots. And Hunter and Richards. Hunter and Richards, so Mr. Levant.
That's Tennis, Tilden.
Tilden, yes. They were...
contemporary.
They were, how were they connected with Tilden?
If they were contemporary, that means they were beaten.
Yes, well, they were double partners. Well, they may have been beaten at
they were.
Singles, but sure. They were his doubles partners, famous doubles partners of Mr. Tilden. Here's one from F.J. Bruguiere, Jr. of Oakland, California. Again, a musical question. Each of the musical selections that you're going to hear should suggest to you a particular time of day. What time of day?
It's night time with me. I don't care when it was written.
Now, you watch. Let's have it first. Mr. Levant?
That's at dawn. That's from Peer Gynt. It's morning Stimmung. I don't know.
I'm surprised that you know that.
Why should I know it?
Well, I don't see how you can know it from experience. You've never been up early.
Every ballet dancer late at night dances to that.
Oh, late, very late at night is the same as dawn.
They try to tell you it's dawn very late at night.
Right enough. Grieg's Morning. Very good. Now the second one. Mr. Ludwig?
Listen.
I beg pardon.
Sorry. It's wrong. It's Afternoon of a Fawn.
Is that? Oh, don't worry, Mr. Ludwig.
You
got off.
You stole it from Tristan.
Well,
you stole it.
That's a typical German accusation, but I don't think for it.
I don't think the...
He didn't steal it. I'll defend Debussy anytime.
They don't seem very reminiscent, but I'm not much of a judge. Yes, Debussy's Afternoon of a Fawn. Well, that gives us morning and afternoon. Let's have the third and last. Mr. Carey?
It's evening. Star of evening. Wagner.
Yeah. Tant, very good, Mr. Carey. Good enough. Of course, having morning and afternoon would be pretty hard not to get evening, I suppose. That gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from Helene Zonin of Greeley, Colorado? Now, in each of these types of literature, gentlemen, name a work in which someone refuses to pay a debt. Someone refuses to pay a debt. Now, what poem can you think of in which there is someone who refuses to pay a debt? This is not an easy question. This would be a famous English poem. Well, it's a tough one. It's in the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Levant, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, brother, can you spare a dime?
Except that I don't think that would apply. Remember, in the Pied Piper of Hamelin, the mayor refuses to pay the Pied Piper after the Pied Piper has rid the town.
2,000 pounds, I think, or something like that.
I knew you knew everything about it, Mr. Kieran, once I start you off. How about an opera? Can you think of an opera in which someone refuses to pay someone else a debt?
Yes.
Mr. Kieran.
Faust.
In Faust?
Mm-hmm.
Name the circumstance.
Well, he tried to refuse to pay his debt to the devil.
That would be right, Mr. Ludwig.
Very good.
Yes, very good. And I think also in the Rheingold, Mr. Ludwig, isn't...
They are only thieves.
It's all debts, that's true.
Every gold, the German golds are all thieves.
They
in
are?
The Rheingold, yes. Mm-hmm. Six thieves.
Six thieves in the
Rheingold? And a woman.
Goodness
gracious.
Well, you remember in the Rheingold, Wotan had promised the giants, promised them Freya.
Yeah.
In return for the building of Valhalla. And then he refused to give her to the giants. Is that right?
It's 4 nights after that to find that out.
Now, how about a story, a short story, in which someone refuses to pay a debt? This, again, is an American short story.
Is that 20 grand? No.
No, I don't think it is. Now, there may be several answers, but the only one I can think of is in... Stephen Vincent Benet's famous story, The Devil and Daniel Webster. There the Faust theme comes in again. You remember that the hero or villain had sold his soul to the devil, and then he gets Webster to get him out of it. I think that loses us a $50 defense bond going to Mr. Garnon, plus a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, and passes us on to a question from Martin C. Brooks of Worcester, Mass. Who or what has replaced each of these recently? Replaced. The Springfield. What has replaced the Springfield? Mr. Levant.
The G-A-R-A-N-D, the Judy Garland, or whatever it is. The Garand, the rifle.
Yes, the new air-cooled rapid.
General McGarvey said it was a better rifle recently.
Yes, he's getting it as okay. It's cool.
He didn't say it from hearsay, I don't.
Philippine, you bet he did. Now, who has replaced David Margeson? Who has replaced David Margeson? Mr. Levant.
A man named Griggs, Sir James Griggs.
Yes, I'm not sure.
Ministry of, wait a minute now.
What portfolio is that?
Give me two chances. No? War.
War is right. War. Yes, Secretary for War in the British Cabinet. I don't know whether it's Griggs or Grigg.
Grigg.
I think it is. Thank you, Mr. Adams.
Well, people say Tibbetts for Lawrence Tibbetts.
I don't know what it is, eh?
They probably say Levant.
How about... the replacement for Thomas Charles Hart, H-A-R-T. Who has replaced Thomas Charles Hart, Mr. Levant?
He's a Dutchman, a member of the Dutch fleet, and his name starts with H.
That's right. Very good.
That's pretty good.
That's very good. I didn't say it was. Any of you remember the name of the...
It's the Dutch commander in the Far East.
What's his name?
Naval commander.
I think we should know his name.
John.
Very important to us, the Dutch Admiral Helfrich.
That's
now the chief of the... Southwest Pacific Fleet of the United Nations. I'll call that right. Now, who replaced Boris Karloff? Mr. Levant.
In Chicago, Erich von Stroheim.
No, I don't mean...
replaced him where?
Oh, around here, more or less.
Well, I
mean... you remember, eh? Mr. Kieran?
James Carradine.
No, no.
is a charming man, which...
Well, on February 13th, Mr. Karloff was supposed to be on this program.
T. Barra.
Yes, but I gave it to you, didn't I?
Well, it's a silly question, Frank.
Oh, I don't know. Sometimes the questions that you don't get do seem silly. Well, that gives us 3 out of 4, nevertheless. Remember that Mr. Karloff was afraid to come on this show on February 13th, and Mr. Ibarra substituted in his stead. Here's one from Frederick L. Gwynn of Chevy Chase, Washington. I beg your pardon, Maryland. Why is the Iliad so called? Why is the Iliad so called, Mr. Adams?
Because it is about Troy, or Ilium.
Ilium, yes. That's the Greek name for it. How about the Bible? Why is the Bible so called? Mr. Kieran?
Because it's a book. The book.
The book, yes. Is it Greek for...
Well, it is Greek. I mean, the root is Greek.
Yes, Greek for the book or the scripture. Now, how about an atlas? We use an atlas. Why do we call it that, Mr. Ludwig?
Why the atlas?
But why do we call it that? What is atlas?
Man who has the world on his shoulders.
Yes, the picture of Atlas supporting the globe. In the early maps of centuries ago, they used to show Atlas supporting the globe. It was a kind of a sign of a map. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Now, how about this one from Ada E. Gosler of West Lawn, Pennsylvania? Can you give me 3 quotations that express the general idea that if you don't like me, I won't like you? Mr. Adams.
Well, is... No, I don't know.
No, take it back.
Oh.
Mr. Adams, again? Mr. Karen, well, Mr. Adams...
If she be not fair to me, what care I how fair she be?
That would be a very good one. What's the prom, Mr. Karen?
It's from Waller, I believe, isn't it?
It's from Wither, I think, but...
George Wither.
The Shepherd's Resolution, I think, is the name of the poem. Mr. Levent.
Mine won't come out straight. If you could like a lady with a ukulele, you could like a lady like me, something like that.
I can hardly understand it.
It doesn't come out quite right, no. All right.
If you don't like me, I won't like you.
I care for nobody, no, not I, and nobody cares for me.
That's a dandy, Mr. Adams. What's it from?
That's from the River Dee, I think.
Yes,
Miller.
Jolly Miller of the River Dee. That gives us two.
Love Me and the World is Mine.
That wouldn't express the sentiment exactly at all.
Not a bad return on Love Me, though.
Not so bad. Mr. Kieran?
When you walked out, someone else walked right in.
Well, that's a challenge. That's antagonistic.
That isn't exactly apposite, as Mr. Levent reminds us. There's a line from Burns. Nobody cares for me. I care for nobody. Except he writes it in Scotch, Mr. Adams, which I'm not going to reproduce.
That's like I'm nobody's baby.
Yes, except they didn't get royalties on it in those days. There's another line. I don't know about this. This is a song, I guess. I don't want to play in your yard if you won't be good to me.
Yeah.
Is there a song like that? Well, you know it, Mr. Adams. That gives us only two, I'm afraid, and sends a $50 defense bond to Mrs. Gessler. Here's one from Mr. Donald Dewar of Byron, Illinois. Can you name three well-known people, members of the same profession, who play these instruments? Double bass, cello, and piano. Now, they're all members of the same profession.
Yeah.
Mr. Levent.
Conductors. Kusevitsky, the double bass. Arturo Toscanini, the cello.
Good.
Piano, Bruno Walder. Fritz Reiner. Nobody wants me to conduct, and I don't conduct very well, but I play the piano.
How about the washboard, the harmonica, and the fiddle? Washboard, harmonica, and fiddle.
That's the St. Louis Cardinals when they had the musical combination. Fiddler McGee.
Right.
Pepper Martin. Go ahead, John.
Frenchy Bordigeray.
That's right. And the harmonica, the accordion, and the piano, gentlemen.
What is that?
Harmonica, accordion, and piano.
Well, I can be called.
That might be John Kieran.
It's Adams, Kieran, and Levent. Now, Mr. Cross points out the very obvious fact that an excellent way to find out where such and such a famous line of Shakespeare appears is simply to ask Mr. Kieran.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen. And by the same token, if you want to find out about the milder, better tasting tobaccos, ask the independent tobacco experts. For they know tobacco as Mr. Kieran knows his Shakespeare, backward and forward. At markets all over the South, these independent buyers, auctioneers, and warehouse men see just who buys what tobacco and the prices paid. That's why their overwhelming preference for one cigarette, Lucky's, means a lot to you. So let me give you some examples of what the experts see at market after market, year after year. For instance, at auctions in Carthage, Tennessee, season of 1939, the makers of Lucky's paid 22% above the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. At Pamplico, South Carolina, 34% more, and so on all over the South. And that crop, properly aged, mellowed, and blended with other fine crops, is in the Lucky's you buy today. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-1. We suggest that you profit by their experience. Remember, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. And in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has paid out three $50 defense bonds and three sets of the Britannica. Thank you, Mr. Ludwig, for coming to Lucky Strike's party tonight. Now, next week, John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams will be on deck. And our guests will be, first, Jan Struther, lecturer and author of Mrs. Miniver, and Julian Huxley, one of the world's leading biologists. Now, remember, for every question that's answered correctly, the sender gets $10 in defense stamps, and for every question that stumps our board, you get a total of a $50 defense bond, plus the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.
When you hear that chant, ladies and gentlemen, remember these two important facts. that at market after market, we pay the price to get the milder, better-tasting tobaccos, and that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco, and in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts.
The program came to you from New York.